Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lessons with Leaders, a special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Lori Siebert. Our producer tonight is Neil Heaver. This is Lessons with Leaders, a show where we have the opportunity to understand what makes the Lehigh Valley great and the leaders and people who get us there. We want to understand what drives them, lessons they would like to share, and why they call the Lehigh Valley home. My guest this evening is Richard A. Anderson, CEO of St. Luke's Hospital. He goes by Rick. Rick has served as President and Chief Executive Officer of St. Luke's University Health Network in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania since 1985. During that time, he has overseen St. Luke's evolution into a $1.5 billion healthcare network in the Lehigh Valley region of Pennsylvania and western New Jersey. St. Luke's operates 7 hospitals and provides outpatient services at almost 300 locations. With more than 10,000 employees, St. Luke's is the second largest employer in the Lehigh Valley. During Mr. Anderson's tenure, St. Luke's has received more than 130 national awards for quality, including the coveted 100 Top Hospitals Award from Truven Health Analytics in the Major Teaching Hospital category in 2015, 2016, and 2017, and has been recognized numerous times by Truven among the country's top cardiovascular hospitals, most recently in 2014. St. Luke's Quakertown campus also was recognized as a 2016 100 Top Hospital in the Small Community Hospital category. St. Luke's University Hospital in Bethlehem is a Level 1 trauma center, a respected major teaching hospital, and the Lehigh Valley's first and only regional medical school campus, created through a partnership with the Temple University School of Medicine. St. Luke's is also one of a select group of international training show sites for GE Healthcare. Mr. Anderson played a major role in the establishment and development of the Bethlehem Partnership for a Healthy Community, an award-winning national model of 200 partners working to improve the community's health status. Mr. Anderson is a member of the Temple University School of Medicine Board of Visitors and the Lehigh Valley Partnership Board of Directors. He earned a Master of Public Health in Hospital Administration at the University of Pittsburgh and completed undergraduate work at the University of Illinois, and in 2011 was named a distinguished alumnus and also received the George Huff Certificate of Award for Proficiency in Athletics and Scholarships. He's been named by Becker's Hospital Review for the last several years as one of the nation's 100 nonprofit hospital health systems CEOs to know. And he is the longest tenured healthcare CEO in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I know that was a lot to say, but I thought it was very important that we say all that. What an accomplishment.
Well, when you have a long career, you survive lots of battles, then you get to put all that on your resume.
That's wonderful. It was great to hear, and I'm so thankful that you are able to come in and talk with us a little bit with our Lessons with Leaders. Can we start by getting to know you a little bit and start with how you grew up and how you landed in the Lehigh Valley?
Who said I grew up?
I love that. That's me too. You know, I say that all the time too. I love it.
Well, I grew up in the Pittsburgh area, a small town, similar to Bethlehem. It's called McKeesport. And they had lots of steel factories and plants and manufacturing, and I, at a young age, probably 11 or 12, after some attempts at baseball and Little League and Pony League baseball, swimming as a sport adopted me. And I began to swim when I was about 11 or 12 years old, and I swam in age group swimming all through my teenage years, and I became proficient, I would say, and I earned an athletic scholarship at the University of Illinois for swimming. And I swam back in that day. You were eligible to swim as a sophomore, junior, and senior. I lettered 3 years. I had some varsity records on some relay teams and
proficient, right? Proficient records.
And was, competed in the Big Ten Conference, which is a Division I. And it was very formative and challenging. And I think it really, not just the swimming at the university level, but I think the age group swimming, it helped me shape my value systems and my work ethic. Not to mention my parents, who I came from a blue-collar family. My father was a plumber. He had his own business, probably at the time six or seven employees. I worked with him. I rode on the truck with him, helped him do certain types of plumbing jobs. But mostly my job was to carry the tool bag and bring him tools, not unlike a surgeon in the OR when he'd say, I need this wrench, I need this tool, I need that tool. And I did that. I served in the U.S. Coast Guard Reserve for 6.5 years during probably from 1968 till 70, maybe 73. Of course, got an honorable discharge. So they used to kid us and call the Coast Guard the bathtub Navy because they didn't really go out in the big ships like the Navy. So had a good background and went to graduate school in Pittsburgh. Didn't plan to do that. Applied to a number of schools, but it so happened that the University of Pittsburgh had an opening. I got in, and it was a great experience for me. And it was, I wouldn't say upward, but it was onward, and then sometimes up, sometimes down over the last number of years. And I moved to Bethlehem in 1985 with my wife and my then young daughter, who still lives in Bethlehem with her husband. And I've got a grandson who is just really, really special. And he's about 15 months old.
Oh, my. Yeah. Brand new grandson.
So he's fun. And so, you know, between my work and I regularly exercise and try to stay fit and still swim.
That's great.
Just for fitness. Back in the day, you could time me with a stopwatch. Now you time me with an hourglass.
That's great. You mentioned something about your father, self-employed.
Yes.
Watching your father.
Right.
How has that influenced you in your own work ethic?
Well, Dad didn't have a lot of meals with us when I was growing up because he was working. And many a night, he'd get a call in the middle of the night, and he'd have to go out and take care of whatever the plumbing issues were. So, you know, you kind of learned that if you wanted to be successful, you had to stay focused and do your job every day.
Right.
Pack your lunch, you know, bring it to work, and try not to get distracted. Sometimes family didn't come first, even though it should.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't. Because, you know, he fed our family, and we weren't wealthy. We didn't belong to the country club. We didn't, you know, go on vacations to Four Seasons and fancy hotels. I think it was, I was 12 years old the first time I saw the ocean in New Jersey, driving from Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And it was memorable because coming back, the car broke down in the middle of the night. So... And I remember it very clearly. A very nice truck driver put us in his cab and drove us back to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
The family. I had a brother. So yeah, also.
Yeah. So who was older, you or the brother?
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest. You're the oldest. You come from a working family, self-employed. I get that. Your dad really was taking care of the family, even though, you know, when we think family first, a lot of times that mentality is financially taking care of the family. So I'm sure your father felt he was taking care of his community and his family at the same time.
And I also
kind of being there when he needed to be.
Didn't mean to talk
over
you.
No, go ahead.
I also delivered papers from the time I was in fifth grade till I was a junior in high school. Delivered 110 papers every day.
So as I'm trying to learn more about you and Lessons with Leaders, and I've been curious, you've been in this community so long, I'm kind of getting a flavor that when you were growing up, you were very involved in your community. If you were delivering papers, you probably knew all of these people on the route. Your dad was the plumber in the community, and you probably knew every house in the area.
That's
so
true.
You were very involved.
Within 4 blocks of where we grew up. Yeah,
right.
I knew them all.
Right.
I delivered papers to their door, and on Sundays also. and collected on Saturdays. That means collect money from the learned how to get those people that didn't want to pay me.
Yeah, knew when to knock on their door.
That's exactly right.
The beginnings of telemarketing.
Absolutely.
So how did all of that evolve into healthcare? You said you went from the University of Illinois and swimming, and then you did the Coast Guard, and then you came back and you applied at the University of Pittsburgh. What led you to healthcare?
Well, concurrently with going to graduate school, I was in the Coast Guard because back in the day, in the late 60s, the Vietnam War was raging. I was certainly draft eligible, but I had enough insight or was guided to put my name on a wait list to get into the Coast Guard Reserve because I would have certainly gone if I'd been drafted, but I wanted to get my master's degree. And so then I served 6 months, 7 months, I don't remember exactly, active duty in the Coast Guard, and then I went into graduate school at that point. So to answer your question, when I was in undergraduate school, several of my professors who would provide advice and guidance said to me, why don't you go into healthcare? That's a growing field. You seem as if you have an aptitude that you would do well in those types of things. And of course, my question was, well, what do they do? Well, you'd run a hospital. Gee, that sounds interesting. Really? Well, where do I go? And they said, well, there's probably, at the time, there were maybe 15 or 20 schools that were offering programs where you could get that type of background. So you could either take one of two choices. You could go to a school of public health, which is what the University of Pittsburgh had, or there were other schools where you could go and get a business background, like the University of Chicago. So I felt, given my aptitudes and my interest, public health and those types of courses would be more conducive to my learning and my ability to be successful. So that's how I went to Pitt.
So interesting. Did you ever circle back with those professors who said, hey, why don't you try this?
Yes, I did, years later. But when you think back, you were one face in a crowd, and they did remember you, and they were very gracious. Congratulations, you're doing great. And I still do go back to Illinois occasionally and connect with some of my classmates that I lived with and went on the swimming team. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice opportunity to reconnect.
I sometimes think leadership skills are just inherent. They're just part sometimes of who people are. As an oldest child, sometimes you automatically are thrown into that role of being a leader. You were a swimmer. You might have been thrown into those roles. So do you feel that you inherently had those skills? And I'm wondering if that's what those professors saw in you, leadership skills that they thought hospital administration, because you have to be a leader for that. Do you feel that there is some of those skills inherent in you, those qualities of being a leader? Or do you feel that all of these little events in your life, the paper route, helping your father, swimming team, Coast Guard, do you feel that those events led you into some of the qualities needed in leadership? Or do you feel some of it's just inherent?
Both. Mm-hmm. I think it's both. They probably saw something in me in class. I wasn't the kind of student that sat in the first row and waved my hand all the time when there was a question. I would kind of try to go to the back of the room, and I was always chattering and, you know, and probably not paying attention. I'm not ADD, but I found in those early years I could listen to a conversation and also do something else. So they call it multitasking. So I can do that now very well, if I do say so. And then back then, I think I was in the early stages of that. And, you know, when you're in the Coast Guard, I was an enlisted person. I wasn't an officer. And you get around certain people. And I recall very clearly we would be in certain situations in training, boot camp. And these were very physical types of endeavors. And there would be certain orders given, and I would put up my hand and say, well, why are we doing this? And that's not what they want to hear. You know, it was very similar in intensity, like to Marine
right.
training,
yeah.
and you would get punished. But then the guys would come to me afterwards and say, you know, you had a point. And so nobody ever listened to me at that point. And probably, you know, that's where it really occurred to me that maybe I could, in the proper way, lead people and do things. And so as I was in the Coast Guard, in a very short time, actually, that 7 months, I was given certain responsibilities. Well, like what? Cleaning the barracks,
mm-hmm.
you know, cleaning the bathrooms.
Yeah.
But I was in charge of the groups, and I got to, you know, kind of flex my leadership skills a little bit in those days. So that was probably the first awakening in me of that type of opportunity to maybe lead.
Well, I think it's interesting because there was actually just a few elements that I'm picking up on, which are curious to me. Number one, that you have the presence of mind to see that something could be made better. Despite rules, why aren't we talking about things that can be better? You also mentioned, you know, cleaning the barracks. As a leader, I think it's important for people to see that a leader actually is willing to do anything. So as a leader, if I ask my people to do something, you know, I would be willing to do it as well. You've cleaned barracks before.
Absolutely.
You know, so you know what it is like for anyone else coming up behind you. Hey, we do this together. There's always tasks that have to be done. That kind of feeling.
That's insightful on your part, because that's the philosophy that I follow now, even in my role as a CEO. I will roll up my sleeves and I will get involved in different activities, and I will sit and work. And sometimes I drive people crazy in the sense that I'm not a micromanager. I'm
right.
not. But I will pick details up pretty quickly and ask questions. And it kind of, I think it gets under people's skin. But not in a way that it's negative, but it's, oh, God, I should have seen that, somebody will say, and I'll say, well, let's fix this. And that's what St. Luke's does really well. Our team, our management team,
mm-hmm.
Nothing's perfect. Things happen, and mistakes are made, but we don't punish people. What do? We fix them.
Right.
Let's fix it.
Right.
And that's the fun part. You get to fix it.
Right.
It's not creating it. It's fixing something and making it better as you go along.
Right.
That's what we do.
Right. I love that. We are talking with Rick Anderson, CEO of St. Luke's, and we are talking with Lessons with Leaders. Back in a moment.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to Lessons with Leaders. This is your host, Lori Siebert. This is a special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse. And we have as our guest this evening, Rick Anderson, CEO of St. Luke's University Health Network. And we are talking about some of the attributes of being a leader, getting to know Rick a little bit more, and what makes a leader. And in particular, why do leaders stay here in the Lehigh Valley? So, Rick, let's talk a little bit about the presence of St. Luke's in the Lehigh Valley, and that it's more than just the health system itself. There's also other things you're doing in the community. How are you reaching out as a leader, not just within the hospital, but in the community as well?
Well, that's a very insightful question, Lori. One of the things that maybe some of our listeners don't recognize is that as a not-for-profit, that doesn't mean we don't make a profit. That means we don't pay taxes on whatever our gains are, or our profit. And so one of the responsibilities and obligations that goes along with a not-for-profit is to give back to the community. That's a very important component of what we do. And all the not-for-profits in the community, the other health systems, also give back to the community. And that's a very important, as I said a minute ago, a very important mission that we have. So in the case of St. Luke's University Health Network, we started back in the early 90s a program called, it's community
partners.
And we have 200 partners, and St. Luke's was the catalyst to begin that program. And the purpose was not to get credit, not to get recognition, not to get accolades. It was to help our community, our neighbors, people who were less fortunate than us and didn't have access to health care. And when it first started, we were fortunate enough to have a local business foundation give us money so we could buy a van. And so if you have been in this community for any period of time, you will see vans circulating throughout the community, especially on the south side in Allentown and other areas where we have facilities, that says a van. It's a van with a St. Luke's name on it. And what we do is we provide services for at-risk children, for moms at risk, for people that don't have access to immunizations. And we do a great deal of that type of service. We have four vans now, and it's a really successful program. I'm really proud of it. It is a national model that other organizations do follow and can follow in how you provide services. And what I'm particularly proud of is not that St. Luke's is doing it, but that we have over 200 partners that work on that. And the person in charge of that program is Dr. Bonnie Coyle, and she's just terrific what she does. And she knows lots of people, and she's a physician that not only leads it, but she walks around with a stethoscope around her neck, and she takes blood pressures, and she does health care and does all those kind of things. And we have a community health department, which is very robust and very much appreciated by those in our community.
And I think that was the Bethlehem Partnership for Healthy Community.
I got tongue-tied.
It's a mouthful.
I got tongue-tied.
That's wonderful. And so reaching out into the community, as well as, you know, the hospital operations as itself and all of the mergers and acquisitions that you've gone through, how has healthcare changed, if you feel it has in recent years, with your role as a leader and trying to be in front of that and watch for that and balance that or juggle it? How much does that play into that vision that you have to have for St. Luke's?
Well, on a very macro scale, broad scale, healthcare has changed a lot, especially the technology, the medical science. But when you strip all that away, the changes from, say, today till maybe 20 years ago, you think about it, healthcare is a very personal issue. It's between the physician or the nurse and the patient, and it's a local issue. So you have to try to balance all those changes that have occurred, changes in technology and medical science and facilities even, to keeping it local. And you can't make it impersonal, because then I think that detracts from the occasions where people can become better, in other words, healed or get well. And I think so often with this corporate approach with mergers and acquisitions, you can lose that personal touch, that local flavor. And in my opinion, you don't want that. You've got to keep that feeling that you're the only one in that room, and you can't be viewed as a commodity if you're a patient. And I'm not suggesting that St. Luke's is perfect, but our goal is to try to keep it local and keep it personal between the physician and the care provider. And we have all kind of care providers now, nurse practitioners and others that are trained to take care of the patients. It's not just the old-fashioned family doc that made house calls.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like keeping your eye on the ball, really, because you, as CEO of St. Luke's, have to have this vision where you're bringing these opportunities to other communities. It's not just the Lehigh Valley or Lehigh County or Northampton County anymore.
We're in 10 counties.
You're in 10 counties. So it's about this vision of bringing healthcare down to the local community level. But I think what you're saying is, while people might see that St. Luke's is doing all these mergers and acquisitions, the eye on the ball is really the patient.
Correct. Always.
And that's
without exception.
So that's that driving force behind all of this.
Yes.
So when you're working with your staff, your board of directors, and you have this vision, are you the one behind that? What's driving that?
Well, I'm certainly an important component of it. However, we're so large, and whatever size organization you are, nothing happens because of one person's personality or their presence. You've got to have everyone seeing the same vision, goal, and I would sometimes equate it that you are a conductor of an orchestra, and you may not know how to play the violin, but you can sure as heck hear when it's out of tune. And so then you have to make the adjustments. Or if someone's playing the percussions, you have to know that they're not striking them at the right moment, and you have to make those adjustments. You may stop the music and say, wait, that's not right. So there are times I do feel like a conductor of an orchestra. But it all has to work together. So the board of trustees has to trust the management. The medical staff has to trust the management. The management has to respect and trust the board of trustees, and certainly with the medical staff. It all works together. And the larger you get, the more complex it gets, and that's when you have to depend on the rest of the team to be working with you. And as I said, we do make mistakes, and we do have times when we could have done things better. But the important thing is you acknowledge it. You don't pretend it didn't happen, and then you fix it. And that's what we do really well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, you asked me a question earlier, and that's probably what I'm the most proud of our organization. When we recognize a mistake, we acknowledge it, and then we fix it. And we're really good at fixing things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can see I'm smiling when I say that.
Yeah, but that's all good, and that happens,
right.
And that's what makes us better, too, because sometimes the mistake happens because there were unknowns at the time.
Right.
And then the mistake reveals those unknowns.
That's right.
And so it's really an opportunity.
Absolutely.
Right? So being a Pollyanna myself, and I'm pretty sure you're a Pollyanna.
Oh, no.
No, not at all.
No. But you get better when you make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to hear the compliments and the praise for the organization. But when you think, whether it's in life or whether it's in your work, when do you really get better? When you make a mistake and you recognize it, and then you fix it, and then you become better.
Mm-hmm. But that's positive thinking as well. You don't get down on yourself for those mistakes.
Sometimes you do. Sometimes
well,
you
course,
do, but you got to get out of it.
Of course, right.
You got to get out of it.
That's key.
And you got to say, okay, tomorrow is another day. I can't change what happened, but I can try to make it not happen again.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question about the medical school program?
Sure.
Do you expect that, you mentioned medical students will do some of their classes on campus. Do you expect or see that they would go to some of these other communities as you've gone into 10 counties, maybe some of the more rural areas? Do you expect students? I don't know how the...
You mean as students or as graduates of the medical school?
Either way.
Both. They do. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's a group of medical school students from Temple that actually come down to the South Side, and they work at the schools, and they work with the children, and they do those types of things. And that's really, really positive. They're not full-fledged physicians. They may be their second or third year, and they actually work in the clinics with Dr. Coyle, and they help with various programs, and they work with the children and in our clinics, and it's really good. So we graduate 30 students a year, and then after they graduate, they go on to residency programs. We have 180-some residents. Some of them stay in Bethlehem, go to the residency programs, and some of them go to other places. I mean, they go to the University of Pennsylvania. They go to Mass General. They go to really good residency programs. But then they come back. What a bonus.
Right.
So they get the experience somewhere else after being here, and they come back and they say, I really like it in this community. I like the Lehigh Valley. And they may go to Allentown and set up a practice. They may go to Quakertown. They may go to Coaldale. They may go, you know, to Monroe County. But we trained them, and they're St. Luke's ready.
Do you have an opportunity to meet with them?
I do. We have different functions. I don't pretend to know each of them. We have 120 enrolled in the medical school class here, but I know some of them. We have different functions annually, and I go to those functions and talk about being energized. I just smile. You know, I use this expression recently. When I go to these functions and I stand there and I watch them and they're talking or they're getting recognized, if you love dogs, and I do, I've had dogs all my life, what does a dog do when it's happy? It wags its tail. Well, my tail's wagging when I'm at those functions. I'll tell you, it's just going back and forth. Big, long tail, wagging and wagging. So that's how I view the relationship with those students and what they've done for the hospital and helped change the culture somewhat. As an educational institution.
In your leadership role, at some point, you will retire, possibly. So are you looking, do you watch for future leaders? Do you have any personal goals of developing leaders within your own organization? And you may not. I'm just wondering.
That's a good question. The buzzword they call it today in organizations is succession planning. And we have a very robust succession planning program. And what we do is it's organized in such a way that we try to identify at all levels various individuals who could move into newer, higher positions within the organization. My job, and you are correct, I will retire, not someday, but, because they say someday never comes. But I will retire. It's safe to say that more of my career is behind me than in front of me in terms of years. However, my job is to leave the organization with, to use a phrase that you might, if you were related to horses, to leave a stable of really, really good leaders that can move into different positions and succeed. The job, one of the important roles of the Board of Trustees is to pick a CEO and fire one. They have many responsibilities, but that's one. So my job is not to tell them who the next CEO of St. Luke's is going to be. It's to have a number of people in a position for them to consider for the job. So I've had a little back and forth from time to time with the trustees about that issue, but they understand that it's not my job to pick a leader to take my place. If I start thinking about retirement and I start planning for retirement, I better retire because then I'm not thinking about my job. So I don't think about retirement. I don't plan for retirement. I know it's coming, but I just come to work every day, put my medal in the gym bag, and get ready for practice the next morning.
That's really neat. When you go home at night, what are you thinking about?
Hope I can sleep tonight. Why? Because I'm getting old. I don't have insomnia, but, you know, I want to get a good night's sleep so I can go to work tomorrow and, you know, give it my all.
Yeah. Are you able to compartmentalize a bit?
Absolutely. When I walk out of the office, for the most part, I can leave it at the desk. And my assistant, who I've worked with for 32 years, will say, we have all this work to do. I say, it'll be there tomorrow. We'll get it done. But with the advent of the iPhones, I think that's really changed how we do business. So sometimes you tend to take your emails home with you in your pocket or your text messages. You know, the text messages dinging and, you know, it's 8 o'clock at night. No, the heck with it. I'm not answering that. I'll do it in the morning.
Yeah.
So there's a little more intensity now because of these iPhones, but they're important right. tool to do business.
Well, I think it's important to know that leaders aren't always having to be on, and you have to recharge from time to time. We're going to continue our discussion with Rick Anderson, CEO of St. Luke's University Health Network, as we continue the show. Stay tuned for more with Lessons with Leaders. We'll be back in a moment.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to Lessons with Leaders, this special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have in the studio with me this evening Richard Anderson, better known as Rick, who is CEO of St. Luke's Hospital. We're getting to know Rick a little bit and his background, how he grew up, and learning some of the attributes it takes to be a leader. And we are interested in how he has continued to stay in the Lehigh Valley. So we're going to get to know a little bit more about Rick as we go through. Rick, there was a Morning Call article written by Sam Kennedy back in 2015 where Bob Martin, your senior VP at St. Luke's, said that you don't like to lose. That sounds like the competitor in you, knowing now that you were a swimmer and a varsity letter and holding records. So tell us about that and how that benefited you. Is there a competitive spirit in there that keeps you going?
There is. I think even if you haven't been in a sport and you're in a leadership position, you have a competitive side that you don't like to lose. I don't believe that sports gives you any particular advantage. What happens in these positions as leaders is you have certain goals set in front of you, and if you stay focused and understand what it takes to get to that goal, you could be called competitive. What differentiates some leaders, in my opinion, is how they motivate and encourage their team to get to that goal. And certainly, as you look back on your career and your experiences, in my case, I always responded much more favorably to people who were encouraging and nurturing, not to someone that would yell at you. Hey, you need to get yelled at once in a while, but when you have someone that constantly berates what you do and tells you that you're not accomplishing something, for me, I would turn them off, and it wouldn't bring out the best in me. The people that brought the best out in me were those that said, you can do better, great job, that's what you need to do. And that's the same philosophy that I follow when I work with my team, and I really do have a great team. And as you probably figured out, I am not politically correct. If somebody's not doing what they need to do, there's a way to tell them and it's certainly not yelling at them. There are those moments, of course, when you get frustrated and you act in an immature fashion. I've had my moments, probably too many when I think back, but when you weigh them all together and you think about how you get the best out of people, it's by encouraging them and helping them to grow. And I think a large reason that St. Luke's has been so successful over the years is because that team that I speak of follows that same philosophy and works well under those situations. We in fact, have a very, very long-tenured group of people. So what does that say? That says to me that they like to work in the culture that we have, and the results speak for themselves. When you have continuity of leadership, which we have, you see great results and great, you know, the culture. So
it's top down. That's wonderful. And then I imagine, too, that attracts talent.
It does.
To St. Luke's as well.
It does. It does. It does. And so as far as not liking to lose, you know, you don't win all the time. So what do? You go back to work and you try harder the next day and recognize sometimes you're going to win, sometimes you're going to lose. If I might, I had a coach back, I think I was 12 or 13, and I remember as I was swimming, and I won my first ribbon, not a medal, but a ribbon. And I was so excited because I got in the finals. This was age group swimming. And so I ran up to the coach, who I liked, and he was very nurturing, and I said, "Hey, coach, look, I got this green ribbon. I can still see it. I won it in Mount Lebanon." It was in Mount Lebanon High School, and it was a fifth or fourth place ribbon. I still have it. And I said, "Oh, I'm so excited. Look at this. I got in the finals for the first time." And he looked at me and he said, "Put it in your gym bag. Practice is tomorrow at 8 o'clock. So what was the lesson learned? Not then, but I realized, okay, you won it. Celebrate it for the moment, but get back to work. And that's kind of the philosophy that I've followed throughout my career. It just kind of got inculcated to me early on in my youth.
Right. You don't settle. You keep going.
You put it in the gym bag. Yeah. You put it in the gym bag, and you move on. Just recently, we announced a merger with the Blue Mountain Health System.
Very recently, yep.
Right. And so what do? You don't put it in the gym bag, but you put it in the win column, and then you move on, and you try to get better, and you help them, and you help the organization, and you move on. Do you celebrate? For a moment, you acknowledge it, you appreciate what happened, you recognize that that accomplishment happened because a large group of people worked together on a project and spent a lot of time. It wasn't one person, it wasn't two. It was a large group of people that made it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps with our success. And when you falter as an individual on the team, you know that you have a person next to you that will pick up the slack.
Well, that also sounds like teamwork. I have a daughter who was in sports, and
right.
That's what you hope.
Right.
That's what you want to nurture and continue to accomplish things with that. Let's talk about some of your favorite accomplishments. So with whether it was the competitiveness, or I prefer what you said, this nurturing and growing and everyone doing better. I like that. So with that, so many accomplishments. We read some of those at the beginning of the show. What are some of your favorite accomplishments with St. Luke's in particular? I know your favorite accomplishment might be your daughter and that grandchild. But
I had nothing to do with the grandchild. certainly family's important. That's not an accomplishment, but family's important. You have to put that in the balance. And that's a good question. And, you know, you're probably surprised at this answer, but I can't really point to one thing and say that I'm so proud. And you might say, why? If you think back to the story I just told you 5 minutes ago,
mm-hmm.
What did the coach say to me?
Mm-hmm.
Put it in the gym bag. Practice is tomorrow. So if you look at a group of accomplishments, I think our quality numbers objectively demonstrate that there's a large group of people that are focused on having good patient care, and those numbers demonstrate that we have really good patient care. Because why? We compete nationally. That's like swimming in the Big Ten finals.
Mm-hmm.
This is big time numbers that St. Luke's University Health Network produces for its patients and ultimately for the community. So I wouldn't say one thing. It would be our quality program, which involves many elements it's lots of moving parts. That's really impressive. Our medical school is impressive to me. And people will say, well, you don't have medical school. And, oh, yes, we do. What do you mean? Do they graduate? Well, no, they get a degree from Temple, but it's a 4-year program. They get their MD degrees, medical doctor, and they go to classes on the St. Luke's campus for 3 years. These young people, they're smart, they're bright, they're energetic. They're like putting a puppy in a room with an older dog. Mm-hmm. Who's the older dog? The hospital. Who's the puppies? The students. And they just give us all kind of energy. And more importantly, with the physician shortage that's looming, we're training all these young people to stay in our community. That's a pretty big deal. But I don't dwell on it. It's something that we do. So, you know, if you said two things, quality and having this medical school that we've had in place since probably about almost seven years, something like that.
Well, I think it's really important, too, when you go back to the philosophy from the top down of this nurturing and encouraging, that goes to those students as well, those future doctors, and that's what we want in healthcare. We want that nurturing aspect and caring for the patient, and we know how successful that is. With helping patients along with the skills and the medical equipment and the advancements and technology that you also have to have at the same time. It's a nice balance. You are one of the longest serving CEOs in healthcare in the nation, and wondering what keeps you here, I think of as you were in the Coast Guard. Is there something about being the captain of a ship?
No. I just enjoy coming to work every day. I don't want to pretend I sit there and always have fun, because it can be challenging and frustrating. And I'm not impatient anymore, but I have a sense of urgency to get things done, and I want to accomplish things and then move on to the next task. And so I think I get under people's skin every once in a while, but I'm that rod that stirs the drink, or I'm that burr under somebody's saddle, or I'm that pebble in somebody's shoe. And I enjoy coming to work and seeing things accomplished. Not for me, but I like to know that we did it. You know, we the organization, we the team. I really get a lot of satisfaction out of knowing that the organization accomplished a lot. And fortunately, I'm healthy. That's not an accident. I have good genes. My mom is still alive. She's 93, just turned 93, lives in Western PA. My father is deceased, and he was fairly healthy up until he died. And so I take advantage of those good genes by trying to exercise and watch what I eat, and trying to stay fit and do preventive health and get my colonoscopy and check my blood pressure regularly and, you know, blood studies and do those types of things that keep me going. And so my feeling is when I'm healthy and I take care of myself, then I can put myself into my work and my opportunities that have been presented through the hospital have been great. We've got a great board. I can do things They allow us as a team to do things, and it's a fine Swiss watch right now, the organization.
I want to go back to something and make a connection here, because as a CEO, leader, we talk about having a vision, and you said the board works very well with you, and that board typically, as I expect, coming to you for some of that vision. And you also said you're the burr under the saddle, you're the rod that stirs the drink, you're the pebble in the shoe. And you had mentioned earlier you like details. So how do you balance the vision with those details and being that burr?
I will pay attention to detail, but I don't like detail. And if something's not going the way it should, I will then get into the detail. And so I think you could go universally to everybody that works with me, and they would say, he's a real pain in the whatever. You know, bleep the word out, but he makes us better. He helps me or whatever to become a better manager. And then likewise, those people help me to be better. So my job is to make them better. And if it requires asking detailed questions, then I will. But I always say to them, you do not want me to start to ask questions. And they understand that.
They need to ask them for themselves
right,
first.
That's right.
And come
that's
to
right.
you with the answer.
That's right. But my job is to make them look better. And then they make me look better.
Right, right.
It just works great.
Yeah, it's great. It's good to have good people around you. What about the Lehigh Valley? I'm sure that you've been courted across the country. What keeps you here in the Lehigh Valley?
Well, just brief story, when I first came and I was interviewing, I was living in New York for several years, and my wife didn't want to stay in New York. I like New York. I like the New York people. I lived on Staten Island. I worked on Staten Island, and they were just really warm, gracious people. But my wife, for some reason, didn't want to continue to live there. So, you know, I decided for the best interest of the family, I would look around, and I came here and I looked, and I wasn't particularly enamored with the person at the time I met with. In fact, I didn't like him, and the chemistry wasn't there. You know, at that age, you know, I was in my 30s. I didn't think I'd get along with this person. So I interviewed and decided, I said to him, very openly, I'm only going to stay here a couple years because I want to be a COO of a larger hospital, which St. Luke's Hospital at the time was about a 490-bed hospital. Nice size. Good hospital. Good, as they say, bones.
Mm-hmm.
Good people. It had a nice culture. And he said, well, I'm not sure I'm going to hire you because I want you to stay longer than 2 years. I said, well, you know. But fast forward, he hired me, and that didn't seem to be a major issue. And I was there for probably 6 weeks, 2 months. He walked into my office, and he said, you know, I didn't tell you this during the interview, but we're going to merge with Muhlenberg. What? That's me. What? And I'm going to be the CEO of the system, Muhlenberg St. Luke's, and you are going to be the president of St. Luke's. And I said, but you never told me. And I said, what about the money? He closed the door and he left, and I kind of moved into the president's office. And that is how I got the job. So that's kind of what's kept me here.
Yeah.
And good people, really good people.
Well, I think it goes back to that community and that community that you had growing up. And also that gentleman who hired you and put you in that office probably saw those same inherent skills that you had that those professors did when they told you to go into healthcare. Rick, we've got about a minute left. Just some real quick questions. If you can, describe yourself in a Twitter-size way.
I don't Twitter.
There you go. Memorable event in your career? I think we kind of...
Probably when he walked into my office and said, oh, by the way, you're going to be the president of St. Luke's. And that was in like June or July of 1985.
If you could pick a different career, what would it be?
I don't know. I've been doing this so long, I never thought about it.
It's like
breathing. I love it.
It's like
I love
breathing. That's great. That's wonderful. And what do you do for fun outside of work?
Well, I like to exercise. I swim. I exercise with a group of coworkers, and we work out three times a week. And I like to play golf. I'm not very good, but I enjoy walking on the golf course. I like to be outside, and you know, I put a lot of time into my job, but I'm blessed with good health, and so between working and family and exercise, that's kind of what I do.
That's great.
Kind of boring.
I don't think so. Rick, it's been absolutely wonderful having you today. I loved getting to know you a little bit better, and I hope our listeners have as well. Folks, you've been listening to Lessons with Leaders. Thank you again to Rick Anderson for being our guest this evening and for his willingness to share his lessons on leadership. Our best to him and his St. Luke's family for their continued dedication to the Lehigh Valley community. Thank you to Neil Heaver, our producer, and especially to our listeners. Be your best with purpose and passion, and you will be a leader. Have a lovely tomorrow.